10173, reel 3.
Colonel's attempt to give us a medal was rather amusing. It was a little Cockney man I met one dark night as the raid was just finishing, doing duty on the docks, guard duty, guarding the stores. And there were piles of cases of bully beef and one thing or another damaged, and this little fellow said to me, mate, you can help yourself to anything you like here. Well, I wasn't going to fall for that, but I wasn't surprised. A month later, when I took the doctor to the military prison, there was this little man in prison. And then, a month later, I met him quite a different way. He was batman to the colonel. And the colonel gave us a lunch party, myself and the other member of the unit that he had recommended. He said, I want to give you a party. I'm waiting for some special beer to come over from the Naffy, and then I'll give you a party. That duly arrived. I hate beer anyway, and that was particularly strong beer, and I disliked it intensely. But I had to try and do my best and see what wonderful stuff it was. And the lunch was served to us by the little Cockney man who I'd last seen in the prison. That's very much a sideline, I'm afraid.
Were there many women in France? Many women? I know that women didn't have the status of COs in World War One, but were there many women who were sort of pacifists working with the FAU in France?
Well, I don't think I really knew whether they were pacifists or not.
If they belonged to the Friends Ambulance Unit, like Rachel Cadbury, would you then have assumed that they were, do you think?
Well, I think all the women who applied to join practically were members of the Society of Friends or attenders or something of that sort. They were obviously all volunteers because they were unaffected by the conscription. And there weren't a great many of them.
Did they do a good job, do you think, in the hospitals? The VADs, did they do a good job?
Oh, I think the VADs did an excellent job. I went into hospital with a temperature of 103, Spanish flu. Was looked after by a VAD girl from Birmingham and discharged for light duties within 5 days, which was pretty good for somebody who hadn't been fit enough to pass the medical.
You said earlier on that you had this special job of looking after typhoid cases.
Looking after?
The typhoid cases. Were you able to use those skills? You know, when you were in France, were there cases of typhoid?
I only came across typhoid at the end of the war. we had a special unit looking after typhoid. In a village some miles from Dunkirk, an inland village. I had very little to do with them, but at the end of the war I remember one very unpleasant occasion when I had to collect an unfortunate old man who'd been put out on a blanket on the ground, suffering from typhoid. His relatives wouldn't have anything to do with him, and I had to get him onto a stretcher and take him into the convent hospital in Courtrai. Well, I no doubt they looked after him as well as they could, but I certainly remember him as being a very unpleasant case to have to deal with.
I was wondering also, you know, you've explained about the shelling that occurred in Dunkirk, and you've described that very well. Were there shelters made for people, or was it a question of just getting into any cellar or dugout that one could? Were there proper shelters for the civilians?
Oh, yes. There were a number of large cellars in Dunkirk. I was caught in raids 2 or 3 times, and everybody went into the shelters, so it was no good staying above ground. I went down as well. Very unpleasant places, some of them. In the docks, you went down a steel vertical ladder about 15 feet under the docks, and you wondered what would happen to you if a shell fell anywhere near. Obviously, you were going into a tomb. But there weren't a great many inhabitants left.
It would certainly seem that your job was very dangerous, the work you were doing.
No,
in
I don't
France.
Think. Well, you were relative to life in the trenches, it was nothing.
Yes. Did you get an idea of what life was like in the trenches from what you experienced when you went up to the front? Did you have any idea of how the troops were living?
No, very little. Because the Nieuport front had practically no trench system at all. It
yes,
didn't need
yes,
it.
Yes, you have explained.
It was waterlogged. And the Germans never attacked across these fields. I'd better move on now, perhaps, to a little later in the war, when the Germans started retiring in 1918. I had gone home after 10 months in France with a fortnight's leave to get married, and incidentally I lost my wife last autumn after 69 years of marriage. I went back and got married, had a week's honeymoon in Scotland fishing, and back to France again, which wasn't at all pleasant. I could have asked to be transferred to something on the home front if I'd wanted to, probably, but I didn't. I was determined to see the thing out. And at that time, September 1918, it looked as though the war might go on for years. But fortunately, of course, the Americans were pouring in then. The Germans were running out of supplies and were starting to retreat. And all of a sudden, I realized that the work in the Dunkirk area was going to be very dull. So I, rather stupidly perhaps, asked to be sent up rather nearer the front, and for 24 hours I was posted to one of our large units serving the French army. Pretty unpleasant place they were billeted in, somewhere behind Papin, muddy fields. I spent my first afternoon I was sent up without an ambulance, so I had nowhere to sleep except the French tents, and one had to I was able to get a stretcher, and to get the stretcher off the ground, you got put sticks in to hold the stretcher off the ground. Very unpleasant night. But the following morning, the best ambulance arrived. And with orders for me to join a small unit of the FAU in the town of Courtrai up in Belgium. That was the other side of the Ypres salient. And that was a great relief. I was very glad to get back onto a car again. Very nice to be given the best of the available ambulances, an old Minerva, Belgian make. I drove across the Ypres battlefield by myself. No sign of life except rats.
What did it look like, the Ypres battlefield?
Oh, it looked appalling, of course. It was just a sea of shell holes, tree stumps, shattered tanks, and other bits of military equipment. Everything very waterlogged, the road in a shocking state. I'd been warned that when I got to Courtrai, I should find the main bridge under shell fire, and probably unusable, and when I got there, that was the position, and I had to go upstream about a mile where there was a bridge of boats, that is, pontoons on the water and planks on top of them. That took me into the town of Courtrai, and I found 4 or 5 members of the unit with a doctor installing themselves in a very large convent. Huge rooms. No lighting, no heating. But quite a respectable billet, so to speak. The problem then was that the Germans were using a large amount of mustard and phosgene gas. My second day there, I was sent to a village close to what was believed to be the line then held by the British, although everything was very fluid then, nobody quite knew where the lines were getting to because the Germans were dropping back. I drove to this place, looking down onto the valley of the Lys, a little village at the bottom, pulled up at a crossroads rather foolishly, hoping to be able to find out where the wounded lady I was asked to look for was, and I was promptly greeted by the German shell, which fell in the ditch right alongside me, and always put that ear out of commission. So I got away from the crossroads, dealt with the individual I'd been sent to find, and back to Courtrai. And in the afternoon, army lorries started arriving full of gassed women and children from the valley that I'd looked down into. The Germans had soaked the place with mustard gas to hold up the British advance. The unfortunate civilians had gone down into their cellars, which was the worst place because it was an inert gas. Over a period of 2 or 3 hours, we had, I suppose, something like 20 lorry loads of women and children, about 1,000 altogether.
What were you able to do for them?
Well, not very much. My job, of course, was driving an ambulance, but we all did our stint at looking after them in the wards. There were no beds. Most of them just lay in blankets on the floor. There were some beds, some stretchers. We spent a good deal of our time dealing with those who had died, particularly the children, taking them down to the convent mortuary at the bottom of their garden, and then, just to make things a little worse for everybody, the Germans staged an air raid on the bridgehead at the bottom of the convent garden, which ran down to the river. Fortunately, our convent wasn't hit, but those casualties who were well enough to take in notice of what was going on were pretty miserable to hear the bombs coming down, and wondering what was going to happen to them. And the following day, I had a rather unique experience. I was taken by a young army doctor to a large hall in Courtrai, where we found over 100 gassed women and children. All the men, of course, had been driven back by the Germans behind the lines. It was only women and children. And there they were, with one old lady trying to give them drinks. Terribly affected by the mustard and phosgene, which had practically destroyed the sight of many of them. Their eyes were all swollen, where they couldn't see. Their breathing was starting to get very bad because the phosgene, I think, particularly affected the lungs. The object of our visit was to pick out about 20 suitable cases for treatment at the convent, where it was supposed that they would be able to get a little more expert assistance and nursing. And the army captain who took me round the ward, when we got to the end, he said, I can do nothing. It's up to you. You pick out 20 of the guest people here that you think may have some chance of living, and take them up to the convent. And there was I, a youngster, given the what seemed to be the opportunity of saving the life of 20 people. All I could do was to pick 20 of the toughest looking children. I thought they might have some chance of survival. I took them to the convent, and they had got a special gas unit from down the line somewhere that was trying to give them suitable treatment. I don't think it was very effective at all. The following day, I remember seeing one of the gas orderlies come out of the ward in tears. And he said, I can't stand it in there any longer. They are just choking to death. They're most of them the children you brought in 2 days ago. You go and see for yourself what it's like. I went in, and it was just what he said, the unfortunate children black in the face, and practically nothing could be done for them. I think in all there were something like 800 killed by the gas at that time. It passed very more or less unnoticed. It was just up at the end of the front. The war news was more concerned with the falling back of the Germans, but it was one of the worst episodes, I think, of civilian gassing in the war.
It must have been very distressing for you, that whole episode, you know, having first of all...
I felt it was a great responsibility to leave about 80 women and children to die with nobody to look after them. But there it was, There were practically no civilians left in Courtrai then.
Well, was there anything you could give them to relieve the pain? Or the discomfort?
We gave we washed their eyes out with soda bic, bicarbonate of soda. Remember the soda bic? And the special squad, I believe, tried bleeding them, but I rather fancy that was a complete waste of time and effort. They were too badly gassed to be saved.
And that was very near the end of the war, you say, when that happened?
Yes, about a week later the armistice came, and I remember I had a shocking cold. I think partly inhaling gas had given me a sore throat, and I was sitting in the dark of a hurricane lantern in one of the large rooms in the convent, which I'd appropriated for myself, and I thought it would do me good to put my feet in hot water. And with my primer stove, I boiled up some hot water, and I was sitting there with my feet in hot water when news of the armistice came into the town, and there were lots of horn blowing and all that sort of thing. I forgot my cold, I forgot my hot water. I went down to the main square of Courtrai and helped others pull the German bandstand to pieces, make a large bonfire, and then dance round the bonfire. That actually, of course, was the night before the official armistice at 11 o'clock the following morning. But the war was over as far as Courtrai was concerned, and I had to deal with the last of my army cases during the war. An unfortunate young soldier was hit in the face by a star shell fired by some drunken Americans who were going round the streets of Courtrai firing off their Vieri pistols, and one of these things came down and hit this unfortunate man and killed him on the spot. And that was the last war casualty and the last stretcher I had to clean up.
How long was it before you were sent back, you know, the FAU, after the war? Did you go home right away, or was there work to
do? I was about 4 months in Belgium after the end of the war, doing work mainly with civilians, but not entirely. And it was very unpleasant, very cold winter. I remember looking at the thermometer at midnight in the Grand Place in Courtrai, and it was exactly 0 Fahrenheit, 32 degrees of frost. And we were billeted in an empty factory